Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 744, and we're recording on February 13th. That's a Thursday in the year 2025. My name is Martin Spriggs, and this is a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. Joining me as usual, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Apparently, technology and ministry intersect at the corner of dark gray and light gray today. Today must be gray day because we didn't even
send each other our outfit.
Wonder if it has something to do with the color of sky outside, huh?
It's sunny here.
Yeah, not bad here either. So
and the lots white snow. Glistening snow bouncing, the sun bouncing off of that. I thought you were going to say it has something to do with us doing podcasts together for 744 times that we kind of have figured out how that works.
I haven't figured anything out. I don't know about you. You got to speak for yourself.
Right. Your love of llamas has not rubbed off on me yet. So.
No.
How is Sally?
Good. I'm actually coming off of a sleep study, which was a really interesting way to spend the evening. I was hooked up to no less than 2,472 wires, and it was interesting. And
not conducive to sleep usually.
Exactly. What is that? But I managed to get a few hours of shut eye and survive the experience. So yeah, another one to add to my resume.
My wife went through that maybe 5-6 years ago and couldn't sleep at all, basically. So it was a waste of time. So anyway, well, hopefully it will benefit. So
yeah,
a lot of people do that and figure out what's going on. And it's important to get a good night's sleep. So it's worth the effort.
Yeah, for sure.
So you'd think with technology, there'd be better ways of doing it than the way they do it. But
it was pretty weird.
Yeah. Well, you're back at it, and hopefully you'll stay awake through the entire podcast.
I hope so. You nudge me if I don't.
I will. Excited about the show today. We have, over the years, invited seminarians from our Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary onto the show, usually around their theses that they are writing as in the culmination of their senior year. And they can pick any topic they want, obviously, with the faculty's blessing. But some of them, and probably increasingly more of them, are picking things that are related to technology, the influence of technology on ministry. And now, certainly, AI is a popular topic. And John Peterson, a seminary senior, picked a thesis that had to do with AI. I'm looking for the name of the title of his paper right now. AI in Public Ministry. What's the name of his paper?
I'm looking. Almost there.
While you're doing that, we had a great conversation.
It's halfway on one screen and halfway on another. AI Associate Examining Artificial Intelligence and its Potential Impact on the Pastoral Ministry.
Right. Yeah, you can't have these nifty titles in theses. It just doesn't sound scholarly enough. But anyway, so we thought we would have him on and talk about his work and some of his thoughts from at least a seminary senior's perspective on AI and its place and practice in ministry. So why don't we play that interview and then we'll circle back and talk a little bit more about what he said. We're really happy today to have joining us seminary senior, John Peterson. Hey, John, thanks for joining us.
Hello, happy to be here. Excited to talk.
Why don't you introduce yourself, kind of what your, at least in brief, what your life history is, what maybe where you vicared and family situation, that kind of stuff. Tell us a little bit more about John Peterson.
Okay, let's see. The only person that I'm aware of who served in the ministry for my family is Delmer Cannenberg. I don't know if that name rings a bell for either of you two.
That name does sound familiar.
Just taking a swing at it, the Wells game here. But I am 26 years old, married. I have a son, a 4-month-old son. Got married.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Got married right before Vicar year, where I got to spend a year in Columbus, Ohio, underneath Pastor Snowden Sims, which was really nice.
Fortunate.
Oh yeah, he's such a presidential man. It was great to learn underneath him in many ways, right? In many ways. Yeah, so I am in my senior year right now, wrote my thesis on how artificial intelligence might potentially impact the public ministry.
Okay. And that's what we really wanted to talk to you about. Where do you call home? Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Indiana, but most of my life I spent in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Very good.
So,
So what got you interested in AI? Give us kind of the backstory or the origin story of your interest in AI.
yeah, I was thinking about that question before we started recording, and I really can't think of one particular place where I was like, ooh, boom, that it came up, you know. But I would say probably just several different conversations I had last year, Vicar year, with both Pastor Sims and his associate, Ross Skutchok. So we had a number of conversations related to artificial intelligence. And I kind of figured, well, I'm going to go back to the seminary and I have 4 months to study whatever I want. I might as well choose what's just super interesting to me at the moment. And I think it's not a stretch to say it's super interesting to a lot of people at the moment.
Yeah, it's been a big topic for us on Wells Tech over the last year or so. And I'm just curious about the impact of AI as someone studying for the public ministry and doing a lot of papers and that kind of thing. Has AI been your friend?
Oh, yeah, I think the immediate jump when you talk to particularly educators about artificial intelligence, the initial reaction is, well, people are going to just tell it to do everything for them, right? But that's, you can do that with a number of different tools, not just artificial intelligence. So I find it very helpful in my study. I was able to do so much more than I could have on my own last semester, using it not as my solution, but as my aid as I continued my studies. So, yeah, there's just a ton of ways that it has helped me. And then also my brothers, too, at the seminary, too, I know. And, I'm sure a lot more than just the people at the seminary are using it. So,
Were there
any
particular,
favorite tools
oh, go
that
ahead,
you
Sally.
tap into? Sorry about that.
Yeah, well, I spend most of my time when I do use it just talking to large language models like ChatGPT, but I don't necessarily agree with the ethics of OpenAI and ChatGPT. So I also use different LLMs. Like there's this one I have on my web browser called Aria, and I heard you mention, Martin, Perplexity in your last podcast. I was actually curious to know, what is it about Perplexity that drew you to that as a, and you might have talked about this already, but what drew you to that as opposed to like a ChatGPT?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the fact that a tool like Perplexity draws on or can use a bunch of different large language models, it makes it a little bit more, I think it makes it a little smarter. So it's not just one model that it's working with. It works against three or four or five. So it's got a little bit broader background. So I find it a little bit more useful. But I think as we go, there's going to be niches that there's going to be the right tool for the right job. For instance, Notebook LM has its particular appeal. We've talked about that on the show before. And I think everybody's going to find, what works best for them. So, did you use, I'm interested in your conversations with Pastor Sims and your other associate there. What was that conversation like? Were you struggling? Were you excited? Was the tone of the conversation, yeah, but do you have more questions than answers? Tell us a little bit about what that looked like.
Well, I can say for Pastor Sims fairly confidently, he is not a big fan of the implementation of artificial intelligence, which I totally respect. I think if you don't want to use it, you certainly not using technology at this very moment are the ones that are kind of refreshing for a lot of people. But the conversation was kind of so he was very much not in the favor. His associate was, but for most of it. And for me, it's just really an open question still, because I think it's just a little too early to condemn it for sure. And also, maybe a little too early to be talking about the ethics of AI. So, in my thesis, that is something I tried to make very clear wasn't my goal, because my goal was to look at different artificial intelligence tools available right now for anybody to use. I tried to look for free ones. There was one that wasn't free, but that one had just an expansive ability. And so I was looking for practical ways to use it right now to save time for public ministers, because I know so many public ministers who wake up every morning with the weight of the world on their shoulders, thinking, if I don't do this, and this institution that I'm a part of will fall. And I don't think that's really the proper attitude of that we should be having in the ministry. And so one of the theological places I used as the driver of my paper was actually Acts 6, where there are the disciples, the apostles are waiting on tables for the widows, which is a good work. It's a beautiful thing to do. But they said, maybe we should delegate this so we can focus further on the ministry of word and prayer. And so that is really at the heart of my research the last few months has been, how can we in the ministry focus more so on word and prayer? Because I spent a lot of time last year behind my computer, not even using artificial intelligence necessarily, but just behind a screen. And I think that's great. I mean, we're living in a digital age. But my favorite thing about the reason I want to be a pastor is simply because I love people. And so there's something there. And I think we can probably use AI to free up some time so we can focus more so on people.
Very good. So, we often peruse the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary's digital library and look at the different papers and things. And I know eventually it will be published. You'll present it, to your classmates and others, things like that. But can you give us a little bit of a teaser as to what's going to be in that paper? What kind of areas, specifics that you think AI would help a public minister?
And actually, Martin, I think I did send you a draft. Now it's just a draft,
Okay.
but in the paper, I looked at small ways. Let's start small. So, for one instance, there's this thing called Otter AI, and maybe you've used it to some capacity. And it actually connects with really well with platforms like Zoom, where it will take minutes of the meeting and for you. And you can go back and recap and interact with it and use that information for whatever you will. So the methodology I used was just, we have this tool. Now, what is a task where this tool can be used? For that one in particular, I looked at secretaries in board meetings because I spent a lot of time last year. And this is a common thing, I believe, that you sit and you read the minutes, and you're supposed to read them before the meeting, but more times than not, you don't. So you spend 8 to 10 minutes, maybe less, hopefully less, looking through the minutes. And instead, what if you use this Otter AI and totally redefine the role of the secretary? Instead of taking minutes the whole meeting, maybe the secretary can contribute to what's being discussed more so, or well, then you have an open way to fill in that position. So that was one tool. And I can go through more if you'd like.
I'm
There's another
familiar
one.
with Otter AI, and I've seen a number of Zoomers use that, and it actually does a very nice job. We use Teams in the Senate office, and it has the Copilot basically doing the same thing, and it is surprisingly accurate, and it distills down to commitments made, discussions had, and next actions, and who's responsible. It's actually quite good at that.
The other one I spent a majority of my time with was called Church.Tech. I actually got into an interview with one of the creators. His name is Doug Foltz. Really, really amazing guy behind all of this. But what it does is it's a sermon companion. So when you hear the word sermon and you hear AI, you start to think, uh-oh, bad news bears. This platform is something where you put your already written sermon into, and you can talk to your sermon and do a number of different things with your sermon, including making take-home Bible studies or at-home devotions or questionnaires that you can go through during the, well, whenever you want your members to do it. There's also a clips function, so you can put your YouTube link in. When COVID happened, it made sense that we wanted to put our whole sermons online. But one of the problems we're having right now is people are watching online instead of coming in person. So I think one of the neat things about this particular tool is the clips function, because it just basically does like a anywhere from 5 to 30 reels, and they can be anywhere from 5 seconds to 5 minutes. It's totally customizable. Everything there is editable. It's very much friendly for review and edit. And instead of maybe watching the sermon online, the whole thing, you just give them a little sneak peek with one of your clips and say, "Oh, you want to hear more? Well, come back home," or whatever your message is. And then also there is a LLM attached to church.tech. Neat thing about that one is it bases its responses primarily off of the doctrine of your sermon. For example, say I put in my Holy Thursday sermon into church.tech. And hopefully, as a confessional Lutheran, it's very evident in my sermon that I believe in real presence. So now that it has that into its database, anytime I interact with the LLM in the future, it will go primarily or respond primarily based off the doctrine of your sermon. So anytime you have a future question about the Lord's Supper with the LLM, and you've probably seen this in Perplexity too, it will give you an answer based off of its previous interaction with you on that subject, which I think is super useful. And then its secondary database is the Bible.
That's
Church.tech.
hopeful, because I think we're seeing tooling some of these models for very specific purposes, and that's a good example of something that is not just a chat GPT for the world kind of concept, but something that's very specific to a use case that you have or that we have. And I can see that evolving too as people get more comfortable and recognizing that there's a usefulness here. So that's awesome. John, really appreciate your time today, and we will watch your career with interest, as I'm sure you consider will continue to consider what technology can do for you from certainly a productivity perspective, but also from other angles as well. So blessings as you continue and finish out your senior year, and as you hopefully begin to serve somewhere too. We're excited to see where that might be, as I'm sure you are.
Yeah, thanks, Martin. And I'll just say one more thing with using this technology, the goal is to get back to the people. So I would really like to see it be the case that we use this technology in a way that kind of renders it obsolete, that we no longer have to use it as much. I don't know how that can happen. I don't really know what steps you would need to take, but I think it's a good goal to focus on more organic proclamation and communication.
Excellent. Please let us know when that thesis is publicly available, and we will share that with our listeners, as well as along with the others. I'm sure there are others that are considering the same topic. So,
Good
again,
stuff.
blessings on your studies.
Thank you.
Our thank you, big thank you to John for taking the time out of, I'm sure, a busy schedule to talk about something that he's toiled over for months and months, and definitely gave us some things to chew on as we're thinking about where AI sits. And great timing, because in about a week we'll be down in Florida with about 30 other people talking about this exact topic. You know, what is AI's place and purpose in Wells Ministry? Thoughts on the interview, Sally?
I guess I like John's attitude toward AI, and kind of funny that he started out with different pastors and their takes on it as
Right.
from his vicar
And
experience
everybody's
and
going to have
everything.
an opinion, yes.
So I think it's here. It's every day I see it integrated more and more in what we're doing, and he's looking for the wins that can assist pastors and allow them to do more and better and focused and efficient ministry. There are many aspects to it, and it seems like we talk about AI as this big thing and this brain and all this, but just freeing up your time from taking meeting notes and having something to reference, it seems very simple when you talk about all that AI can do for you, but imagine that multiplied by all the pastors in our synod, and it could add up to a great big efficiency in the work that they do. So I like the practical side of it that I got from what he said.
Yeah, he dived right into that particular topic of, you know, the co-workers especially have been trained to work in means of grace ministry. That's a topic we've been talking about in some of our internal meetings. And there are a lot of things that a teacher or a pastor does that could be done perhaps more efficiently or with the help of AI that have nothing to do with means of grace ministry, you know, word and sacrament. So I think there are a lot of things that could be gained from a better study and a thoughtful, and he used that word, I think, a thoughtful application of AI to different things that we do day in and day out that could be done by somebody other than ourselves. And I think that was a great point. And he referenced Acts 6, you know, freeing up the apostles from waiting on tables. It's let the computer do what it's good at, and it's getting better at things. So I think that was a big point of his paper.
Be discerning, obviously. And that's kind of part of that training aspect of what is it that we need to do as we work with AI, not just take it at its output, but actually, test it against what we believe. One interesting piece of the paper that I found as I was perusing the actual document was that he mentioned a couple of different frameworks and how they might apply to using AI in pastoral or called ministry. One of them was SAMR, which we're pretty familiar with from our discussions with Jason and Rachel this the school year, where you take it from just substituting something all the way up to, you know, innovating and doing new things with creating. I don't remember what the actual R word is, but anyway, he has SAMR built into his study. He also pointed out Moloch's four principles. And this comes from a guy named Ethan Moloch, who's a professor at Wharton, part of the University of Pennsylvania. And he's also co-author or author of a book, Co-Intelligence, Living and Working with AI. And he had kind of 4 points. Always invite AI to the table, acknowledge its limitations, engage with it critically, but it's not very predictable and reliable. It can surprise us with kind of new things and things that we wouldn't necessarily think about. And obviously, it can do what they call hallucinate and come up with incorrect answers as well. So being aware of that, make it a player, invite it, see what it has to say, develop expertise. Your own expertise is going to be what you use to evaluate what the AI is spitting out to you. So as smart as you can be, then that will rub off on how you can evaluate what it tells you. It says provide oversight. Obviously, you're going to prompt it. You're going to guide the tool. You're going to make sure the output aligns with what values you have and things like that. For us, what our doctrinal statements are, our theology is. And then finally, don't delay. Start using AI now and learn from failures. So there's going to be challenges and things aren't going to go smoothly. And you're going to learn from along with learning what the ins and outs of AI. It says a quote from the book, to fully understand this principle is also to understand the importance of beginning to use it today. So just knowing that it's worth the investment, I guess, is kind of what I got from that.
Absolutely. Want to go back to that SAMR model, because he does give some nice examples in the paper of how you think through the SAMR model. Substitution, augmentation, modification, redefinition is the acronym. For substitution, he writes, using AI to transcribe sermons or meeting notes. So a very simple, you know, process. So it listens, it records the words, it writes the words. Same with meeting notes. Augmentation, using AI to assist with sermon writing and brainstorming new ideas. Okay. Modification, adapting AI-generated content for different age groups or cultural contexts. And then finally, redefinition, using AI to create new forms of community engagement or and online ministry. So kind of think of it as a graduating scale, and you build and build. And ultimately, the use of technology in education or in any other discipline is a candidate for thinking through that model. Anybody can start at a very simple place, and those are the examples that are often given, but it takes a little work. It takes some thinking, some application, like you were talking about. How is this going to really help? What is its long-term value, and what is its application to real ministry? And that's where you get into the higher levels of the SAMR model. So good stuff.
And just doing it and making mistakes, figuring it out. I think I mentioned this maybe on our last show, Martin, but I heard a speaker recently say, tell AI what their role is, give them a persona and explain that to them. You're here as my marketing assistant, and I have a 20-minute sermon that I'd like to pick out pieces to use as short reels in social media that would be appealing to 20 to 40 year olds or whatever. You know, I mean, be very specific. That's that whole prompt nuances and things. I think we had a term for it, but the prompting is very important.
Right. Yeah. And if you ask a question like that and it shrugs its shoulders and says, I don't have anything for you, that tells you something too, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing in there for that. so good. Yeah. You think of AI as a smarty pants, and not all smarty pants know all the answers, nor are they the be all end all of all knowledge either. So you got to treat it as such. All right. Thank you, John, again for your time and your continuing and final preparations to enter the full-time public ministry. An exciting time for him
Very
and his
much so.
family, and blessings on that journey. So thanks for joining us. All right, Sally, should we move on to ministry resources? That's a segment in our show where we try and pick something that might be helpful, a very timely thing that might be helpful to folks as they're strategic planning a particular time of the church year or opportunities that they can pass along to congregation members. And it's that latter one that's on our docket today.
That's right, Martin. Making sure I'm sharing the correct screen. Very timely. I giggled when you said that because there is an event coming up this Sunday, February 16th, from 6 to 7 p.m. Central Time. There's going to be a national online teen Bible study. And I believe they've done this once before. This one is titled Love to the Fullest. It says some sources claim that there have been over 100 million love songs written in our world about the topic of love. Oh, 100 million songs about the topic of love. Everyone's talking or singing about it, but what exactly is love? What does it look like? How do we know where to find it or when to find we will find it? How do we know how to show it? And that's what this Bible study is for teens, especially to explore those questions and more as we look closely at Jesus and find out what is love to the fullest. So if you haven't yet, there is a registration form and there's still time to get in on it. It's a Zoom call, so it's a Zoom registration form that you'll need to fill out, just providing a name and email address. And it may be something that you want to have a teen meeting at church and participate as a group in the Bible study, however you want to do it, but do go ahead and get signed up so that you get the links and are able to join the meeting at the appropriate time. Check it out.
Awesome. Yeah, and I should maybe make a plug if you all out there, you listeners and viewers, have things that you would maybe think fit this category of ministry resource, do share that with us. As we just kind of look around, look over our shoulder and look around the building, look around wells.net, and we come up with something, but maybe there's stuff out there that we're missing. So if you've got a conference or something that might be worth sharing, please let us know that. We'd love to plug this in. And we can always have more than one as well. So
Awesome.
wellstech@wells.net's the email address, wellstech.wells.net's our website, and different ways to connect with us are there as well. So all right, Sally, I think it's that time of the show where we dedicate a couple minutes to our picks of the week. What did you bring with you today?
Today, I'm going to point you to a blog from Blueprint Schools. That's our friend Dana Kirkhoff, who's been on the show before. And she is writing about school marketing must do, a simple way to get found on Google. And that's basically to claim your Google business listing. And so by not owning that, it's like not having a phone book listing before there was the internet and everybody was in the phone book. So obviously, people Google to find your church and school. And the point of owning the business profile is that you can actually contribute to what's displayed based on your business when it comes up in search results. So you can go there and say you want to claim the profile from a particular place. And then it does recommend separating your church and school profiles. If they're put together, then you're only getting half of the exposure. So you may as well have two separate profiles. And then finally, go in and make updates to the profile. Make sure you have a good description and a good category that it belongs in, your accurate operating hours, admission information, a website link, and really good photos, images of the campus, the classrooms, and student life, she says. And then you're able to post to it. And she recommends doing it on a weekly basis, any upcoming events or open house or parent and student testimonials, school news, community involvement, all those kind of things show Google that your school is active and trustworthy. You can even encourage others to review your school. So parents can give, a positive review and 5 stars, and that goes a long way to speaking about, the school's credibility as people are searching and finding it. I will tell you that Google emails regularly and reminds you about your business profile and asks you if there are any updates needed, tells you how many visitors you've had based on your profile listing and clicks from it specifically. So it's not just a one-way street where you're giving Google information and they're displaying it. They're also giving back to you some statistics and other encouragements and things related to your site. So definitely worth doing and maintaining over time, not just doing it once and forgetting about it. So thanks for the blog post, Dana.
And thanks for sharing it with us, Sally. Yeah, I think that's important. Often I will look at that and the reviews on there for, a restaurant or some other event that I'm going to or place of business. So it is read, and I think it's one of the maybe primary tools that somebody might use. And, having good information and or having just, one or two little soul reviews out there that aren't so nice, can send the wrong message too when, encouraging your school parents or, friends of the congregation to submit reviews. It is a good thing too to kind of soften that if somebody has a bad experience. So good,
Definitely.
very good. All right, my pick of the week. Let me share my screen. Is all about tracking what you read and capturing the notes that you take. You read for a reason, I would say, other than fiction, and biographies and those kinds of things. Maybe you just read for pure enjoyment, but most of what I read is for business purpose. And I do take notes, and it's important that I have a way to use those notes. Teaching a class right now for MLC and a grad course, and one of the things I'm trying to get across to my students is many of the notes, many of the ways we've taken notes over the years has not been overly helpful. It's not a good stewardship of our time because, writing between the lines and in the margins and writing in a big notebook that sits on the shelf, that does you no good following the time where you are actually in the experience of taking the notes. So you have to kind of ask yourself, why am I taking notes? What good is going to come from this? How am I going to use these? So you have to take notes thinking, in what context is this going to be useful for me in the future? And ReadWise is a tool that I use, and I've mentioned it on the show before, is a tool I use and one of the main reasons that I take electronic notes, because it gathers all that stuff together. So ReadWise is a service. It is paid for service, but it's not overly expensive, and there is a education offering, I think, as well, like 50% off. But it basically hooks up with all the digital ways that you consume information. So as you're looking at where is it going to surface what I'm looking at, what I'm reading, it basically covers almost any digital resource. So it will capture any highlighting you make or any notes that you take. And then it has tools to allow you to resurface those things over time. It has a review process. So every day it'll send you an email with however many highlights that you want it to. And then you can kind of rate the highlights, or you can add more notes to the highlights or do something with them. And it improves your recall. So it is just an excellent tool to both help you capture the notes that you've taken and the highlights that you've made, but then also revisit them and help you better remember them. And then you can tag it, search it, organize it, and it syncs with all kinds of note-taking apps as well. So the import and export functionality is truly amazing about what it can do. Its primary use for me, I would say, is with Kindle books. I almost always purchase my books through Kindle so that I can highlight and capture notes that way and get them into the system. But it will do many, many different kinds of connected sources, including Twitter or X. The bookmarking service I use, Raindrop, but it uses connections to Apple Books, Goodreads, Kobo, Digo, RSS readers, Instapaper, voice notes. It even gives you the opportunity to plug in books that you've read before you even maybe started using Readwise, and it will bring in popular highlights that others have made from those books. And then you can determine whether those are useful or not. You can also import and upload stuff that is maybe more manual. So you could do a freeform import or email imports, or connect it directly to the Kindle. One interesting tool that they have is Highlights from Paper Books, which allows you to take a picture of a page or pages and upload it, and then it will OCR it, make those highlights available to you. You can put PDFs in there. The list really is pretty exhaustive. So there's if you're doing it digitally, or maybe even not even it did in a digital fashion, it's going to be able to suck those highlights and those notes in. Instapaper Pocket are the popular ones too that it does. On the export side, and this is where it gets a little more interesting. If you want to do something with those notes, it'll connect with all kinds of note-taking apps so that you can not just be having to work within the Readwise app, which is very good. You can do a full search and read your notes and reread your notes and add other notes. But it'll work with all kinds of personal knowledge management systems, as well as things like Apple Notes and Evernote, and Notion and Obsidian and Notebook LM, which is kind of a nice integration. Sally just mentioned it when in our interview with John Peterson. You can throw in all of the content. And in this case, it's going to export your highlights to Google Docs and then import them into to Notebook LM. And then you can do an analysis or ask questions of your notes, which is kind of interesting. You can do that actually in Readwise too. So this just kind of makes the effort of note-taking a little bit more, you feel better about it because you have a chance of using what you wrote, what you highlighted in the future. Maybe that's writing blog posts or putting together programs or, whatever the reasons are that you're taking notes, this actually allows you to do something with them. So Readwise, I can pull up the pricing page here just to see what the base pricing is. For the Lite, Readwise Lite is $2.80 a month for the Readwise, and this is the education discount, 50% off, $5 a month for the full Readwise version, which includes the reader app, the exporting function that I talked about, the organization functions, and so on and so forth. So there is a free trial. So if you're interested in something like this, I would say give it a shot. It's kind of a integral part of my note-taking experience. So that's Readwise.
Very good. I can imagine the power. I can't say that I do the volume of reading that you do, though. I read more, I guess more fiction or more for enjoyment than I do for taking notes from it.
And I do
So,
that too, but normally I do that with Audible books,
oh, sure.
so in the car or whatever, but that's where I get my fiction fix.
Okay.
But even if you read on the web, if you're reading blog posts or articles, something that's instructional on the web, documentation even, This will capture that as well. So you can highlight stuff on the web, hit the button, and in it goes into your Readwise system. So you kind of are building a body of knowledge with that wherever you're capturing the stuff. So I like it.
Pretty neat.
All right, let's move on to our community news and feedback.
And one more screen share, this time pointing at our Wells Historical Institute.org website and something new that's being debuted because this is a very special year, Martin. 2025 marks the 175th anniversary of our dear synod, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. And so we're going to be celebrating, I think, all throughout the year. And in one way that we're celebrating is by this new timeline that's been launched on the Historical Institute website. It actually goes back to the 1800s and walks you through events related to our church, starting all the way back in 1833. So each of the points on the timeline has different narratives. It even has links to Spotify and Apple Podcast. It has just historic figures. It has photos associated with some of the content that's here. And there's the page that has the founding of the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary in 1850. So you can scroll through the ages, not just the 1800s, but the 1900s and the 2000s are also included. And lots of history there for us to learn from and understand. So I think someone's been working really hard on website development because this is some really cool stuff that we have here. All kinds of content. Maybe a quick shout out to our Synod archivist, Susan Willems, and to our webmaster, Julie Duran.
Yeah, and this is maybe a good example. I think there are some congregations who might be interested in using a technology or a tool like this. There are a bunch of them out there, but this is kind of a nice visual way to get people interested in what some would consider a dusty topic. And I think there's an opportunity here to spruce things up and let people know that, yeah, history is important. And it is, I think there is some interest. I know on our church website, we just have a one page, that lists dates and names and those kinds of things. This would make it a lot more visually appealing. So I like it.
Really cool.
Yeah, very nice. Sally, I think that is going to about do it. Between now and the next time we're going to do a podcast, we're going to have a little Wells Tech AI Summit, and we're going to be talking about AI with, as I mentioned, about 30 other people. And we hope to have some interesting content to share with you once we're back. So maybe a little, we normally have 2 weeks in between podcasts. We may do stretch that out a little bit for this time, but it will be well worth it, worth the wait. So I think that is going to about do it. Thank you, Sally, for your work. And I will see you down in Florida.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Have a great one, everybody. Bye-bye.